This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey. Chapter 3. To call what went on inside his head a dream would be like calling a nuclear explosion a firecracker. Free from the physical demands of movement and conscious thought, the boy's mind exploded through a universe of images and misshapen facts. At moments, he was a knight on horseback in a burger bar, a spaceman undersea, a rap singer at a funeral. He spoke Chinese on toast and conversed in fluent Martian to a duck. He was whipped by nuns and fought them back, hugged by an octopus who told him he was ugly but lovable, and fired from a cannon onto the windscreen of a pink jumbo jet. Sewn among the nonsense, however, was a jumble of coherent pictures and thoughts that could have been real or fabricated memories. There were facts and names, places and feelings, and all of them came and went in a blur. At one point, the sun penetrated his burrow in a small shaft of brilliant light that lit the twin faces of the sheep and the boy. A girl, somewhere out in the real world, shouted, "I'm here." She was close, the quality of her voice different from those in his head. He strained through slitted eyes. A shadow flicked through the space above as a figure jumped from rock to rock. Still shivering, the weight on his eyelids irresistible. He closed them and moved his lips to speak, but nothing came. He would have to move. Help was close. He would have to move or die. Soon. In a minute. Move or die. He counted to 10 and then, with the will of 1,000 saints, looked out at the world and saw that somehow those 10 seconds had expanded to hours, and it was dark again. The dead animal felt like the grim reaper pinning him to his grave. Without the strength to lift himself free, it was some time before he found that by slipping sideways slightly, the foul coat sloughed from his body as though it was smeared with grease. Disorientated, he pulled himself to his knees, and circled the pit like that until he found a hole he just entered by. Outside, a light drizzle pattered the ground, and he contemplated going back inside to the relative warmth of his dead friend. But for how long would he be warm? Soon the rain would soak even that stinking haven. The effort to move had been so great that giving up this easily would be a cowardice that would surely kill him. Thankfully, the apparition that was the girl had been moving in the same direction as he had the previous day, because if he was forced to recross the boulder field, the hollow tomb would suddenly seem so much brighter. Stumbling and fumbling for the path, he was soon soaked from above and slicked in sweat. Drizzle became rain and rain became a torrent that fed numerous streams running down the mountain crossing his path to the sea. To his left, the breaking surf rolled pebble and sand, a steady rhythm of inhaled and exhaled breath. His long hair, dirty and lank, dripped a small waterfall from his fringe, so that he was forever wiping his face with one hand and then another. This concert of water coalesced to form a constant hiss that felt as though his mind was not quite tuned in. Keeping to the path was at times impossible. It was clear enough and mostly followed the shore, but every now and then it meandered right, lost through a patch of trees or bracken, and the boy found himself falling over rocks and wading through mud to keep the forward progress flowing. And then he saw it. At first he thought it was a cruel trick of his imagination, death taunting him with images of warmth and safety. He stopped and stared ahead and to the right. A lonely light shimmered through the rain, as though a lamp carried by another hapless traveller caught in the wet wilderness. But as he watched and wiped his eyes, the light steadied to match the drunken sway of his body as he tried to stay upright. Frightened to admit to himself that he thought he was looking at a cottage, he bit his tongue, but soon gave in to the hope that panicked him into running wildly through the stream and thorn and rain until there could be no doubt. He was saved. A white cottage, ghostly bright among the drab wash of gloom, shone as though made from ectoplasm from behind the veil of rain. He stood for several seconds watching the building, looking at the small rectangle of whiteness that was the window, expecting to see an angel who would save him from the hell he'd woken to. At last, as if roused from another dream, he ran forward and rapped on the green wooden door. Chapter 4. A dazzling slab of light fell through the open door, and a girl, about his own age, wherever that was, stared at him in wide-eyed disbelief. Wisps of black hair frizzed from under a towel wrapping the angel's head. She opened her mouth to speak, but as she did, a large man pounded a narrow hallway, grabbed her arm, swung her away, and slammed the door in the boy's face. Considering the situation, his condition and the bizarre thoughts he'd been having, he was numb to logic. And strangely, he chuckled. His legs buckled, and he sat on the grass in front of the doorstep. Inside, voices, a man's in particular, battled. Feet stormed stairs and doors shuddered with sudden violence through the watery hiss. Slipping sideways, he saw the door reopen, tree trunk legs bending at the knees, large hands scooping him from the sodden ground. And so, the boy entered the cottage. Still shivering and dreaming nuclear dreams, he lay on a soft mattress, his clothes cut from his body replaced by warm and dry cleanliness, cocooned inside a sleeping bag, his crucible for regeneration. How long he lay in that state he wasn't sure, but by the cycle of light and dark through the chink of the cloth-covered window, it was more than a single day. When his mind became clear enough to think, he was surprised to note that he hadn't been taken to hospital or airlifted by helicopter as some part of him knew might be normal. Neither had he seen the girl. Was she even real? Perhaps she was simply the imagined shape of his rescuer, his angel. A Cinderella enslaved by a mad hermit. Was this his fate too? Was he being saved to serve this strange master for life? Every now and then, a bowl of soup or hot chocolate or oversweet tea was forced down his throat, but even so, When he awoke, he was ravenous. The room was spare, damp and dingy. Everything was wood, old. The boy lay still and listened. There was movement downstairs, but no talking, and no way of telling whether there was one, two, or more occupants in the house. Of course, there had to be at least two. Crossing the wooden floorboards on bare feet, he pulled aside of the makeshift curtain clear of the window. The weather had not improved. Water streaked the glass as though the cottage was travelling along a railway track during a rainstorm. The sea, no more than 20 meters away, was grey and restless. A small patch of grass outside the front door was a cultivated island among wild and unkempt vegetation. He could see no road. Perhaps it ran behind the cottage. He was dressed in a dark blue tracksuit. It was warm, but the dampness of the house and the cold boards on his feet made him shiver just the same. He couldn't understand why, but there was something about the place that unsettled him. This was his sanctuary. He was with friends. They'd saved him. Why then did he continue to shake? Was the dampness really that bad? Of course, he decided. He was being stupid. He recrossed the floor, took a deep breath, prepared to thank his rescuers for their kindness, and pulled on the doorknob to leave the room. But nothing happened beyond the hollow sound of rattling wood and metal. The door was locked. Why would they lock the door? Was he a prisoner? He tapped the wood with a bent knuckle and said rather hoarsely, "Hello? Is anyone there?" There was no reply. He tried again, this time with more force. "Hello! Let me out!" Immediately, the noise downstairs turned to whispers and then to a scuttling movement as though he'd just disturbed foraging rats. Eventually, footsteps shook the stairs and a key squealed and grated in the rusty lock. A man, giant by any standards, loomed over him. His unsmiling face shabby and unshaven, his wide shoulders barely slim enough to squeeze through the frame. The boy stepped back and sank onto the bed.
"You're awake."
This self-evident remark was almost an accusation, as though the boy had no right to be awake at all. "Yes," he replied with equal redundancy.
"You'll be hungry."
At these words, he dared be nothing else, remembered that he really was ravenous and nodded his head vigorously. The man backed out the door, closed it, and then, with an action more efficient than words, locked him in again. Not quite believing what had just happened, the boy tried the handle, but it was true. He was trapped.
DreamWorks.com.